Are you stressed because of work, family, or relationship problems? Are you tired of focusing your time and energy on projects and activities without seeing any positive results? Do you feel like you have the weight of the world crashing down on your shoulders? Well, we have just...
It had to be said, the Oregon State Highway Division not only had a whale of a problem on its hands, it had a stinking whale of a problem. What to do with one 45-foot, 8-ton whale dead on arrival on the beach near Florence?
It had been so long since a whale had washed up in Lane County, nobody could remember how to get rid of one. In selecting its battle plan, the Highway Division decided the carcass couldn't be buried because it might soon be uncovered. It couldn't be cut up and then buried because nobody wanted to cut it up. And it couldn't be burned. So dynamite it was, some 20 cases or a half ton of it. The hope was that the long-dead Pacific gray whale would be almost disintegrated by the blast, and that any small pieces still around after the explosion would be taken care of by seagulls and other scavengers. Indeed, the seagulls had been standing nearby all day. As everything was being made ready, we asked George Thornton, the highway engineer in charge of the project, for his final observation.
Well, I'm confident that it'll work. The only thing is, we're not sure just exactly how much explosives it'll take to disintegrate this thing, so the scavengers, seagulls, and crabs and whatnot can clean it up.
Is there any chance it might be more than a one-day job?
If there's any large chunks left, and we may have to do some other cleanup, possibly set another charge.
The dynamite was buried primarily on the leeward side of the big mammal, so as most of the remains would be blown toward the sea. About 75 bystanders, most of them residents who had first found the whale to be an object of curiosity before they tired of its smell, were moved back a quarter of a mile away. The sand dunes there were covered with spectators and landlubber newsmen, shortly to become landblubber newsmen, with a blasted blubber beyond all believable bounds.
Good evening, Montreal. I hope you're doing really well. This is Easy Sonic Living here on CKUT 90.3. This week we're going to do a whole montage of different animal-human encounters, partly inspired by taking my young son to Animal Lion Safari with his 90-year-old granddad this summer, and also a lot of other ridiculous encounters between humans and animals. And we're also going to listen to a lot of music by Hawkwind from the 1970s, because one of the sax players just recently died, and I just discovered this amazingly crazy psychedelic band. And it will be lots of other gems for you. So it should be a fun exploration into the universe of sound, as always. So sit back, relax, enjoy yourself, and we will see you on the other side. Easy Sonic Living, CKUT.
Our cameras stopped rolling immediately after the blast. The humor of the entire situation suddenly gave way to a run for survival as huge chunks of whale blubber fell everywhere. Pieces of meat passed high over our heads while others were falling at our feet. The dunes were rapidly evacuated as spectators escaped both the falling debris and the overwhelming smell. A parked car over a quarter of a mile from the blast site was the target of one large chunk. The passenger compartment literally smashed. Fortunately, no human was hit as badly as the car. However, everyone on the scene was covered with small particles of dead whale. As for the success of the effort, well, the seagulls who were supposed to clean things up were nowhere in sight, either scared away by the explosion or kept away by the smell. That didn't really matter. The remaining chunks were of such a size that no respectable seagull would attempt to tackle anyway. As darkness began to set in, the highway crews were back on the beach burying the remains, including a large piece of the carcass which never left the blast site. It might be concluded that should a whale ever wash ashore in Lane County again, those in charge will not only remember what to do, they'll certainly remember what not to do.
The other ones.
I'm off the
coast. Oh, yeah, there is a monkey on that person's car. Look, there's monkeys on this car.
Take advantage.
On that red car? Can you see these guys over here? Fences. Fire back there.
You can see their head place back.
Oh, you can see them on this side, too. Better in the wild.
On this side.
Compared to it, then there's some wilderness. Yeah, yeah,
the
see it on the car? That's a baboon. Oh, and this car too. Okay, they should show the next one should be like it.
Yeah.
What do you see? Did you see a third one too?
Do you see that monkey? Do you see the other animals around the
top
of the car? Okay.
Right here.
Yeah. Oh, you trying to find more monkeys?
Thank goodness
for that. Yeah, there's monkeys down there.
It's like,
we'll see the monkey
talking.
Here's the one.
Not all monkeys.
Look at this. They're pretty chill, though. They're
we're getting closer.
We do this every day.
I know. We already threw all our food. We haven't had lunch yet.
I want to see one of those Teslas.
Yeah.
Get one done.
They pay $500
too. Under the sea.
The big windows. That's
my yeah. Oh, there's some over there.
I heard the paper rustling.
Do
you
see them?
She has to do all
day.
See
them?
I mean, I can imagine if a car made us move, but...
Yes.
Well, the thing is, they're captive animals in a very small space.
Yeah.
So they're probably all insane.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. You don't know, yeah. Maybe.
No, they're not an outside. No, if you were to tell her, you know what, you're going to say, hi, Eddie, where are you?
I didn't say we could ride on it. Who told you we could ride on the giraffe? No, we can only look at them. Because it's like a zoo. You can't ride on animals in the zoo, right?
You know, fly. When you dance right? About your head. She's rolling it over you. VI.
I rode an elephant in Tampa, too, at the Busch Gardens.
We got into a small fender bender, the airbag or something?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a zebra.
That would be bad.
You see
the zebra? Oh, wow, that rhino is into a
zebra.
Oh,
your
zebra friend is there. Look at that rhino. Look at that poster of the rhino.
Remember the zebra from Madagascar?
Yeah.
There's always something. Yeah, both those things, just traffic. It probably keeps them just enough stimulated.
In this linnaeum where they everyone knew there were nurse sharks, and they wouldn't want to swim around the nurse sharks, so he decided he wanted to swim around the nurse sharks.
Oh, no.
You see that?
Yeah. Giraffes? That one's chewing something. Actually, they're all chewing something. Oh, you see it earlier?
Why?
They must be eating grass or something. There's a bunch over there, too.
Look at that.
So, but there's one lone one over there.
They have all of their backs to us.
Yeah, I know. It's like paying attention to the rhinoceros. I'm eating.
Yeah.
She's done the street.
No, we can't run on the grass because.
Oh, look at the big one.
The animals will attack us if we run on the grass.
Yeah, that was eating out.
Can we
ride on a giraffe?
Oh, we can't ride on a giraffe. No.
Yeah, what's gonna happen if this plan don't work, eh?
The old man will boot us out of the house. We'll have no place to sleep.
Yeah, I could live in this van, eh? I don't need
If you need money delivery, you'll starve.
Well, this plan sucks. I ain't going in.
The Artur, I'll tell the old man you gave away his beer money.
Okay. You boss me around.
Morning, George.
How are you, Betty?
Give me 12 fresh Yukon gold. Please.
12 Yukon gold. 7.93.
That horse ran like a bum, yes.
Yeah.
See you tomorrow.
Okay, take it easy.
Well, Elsinore.
12.
24.
Oh, yeah, sorry. 24 Elsinore beers.
24. Yeah.
24 Elsinore. 1470.
I believe there'll be no charge on this 2-4 of beer, thank you.
Excuse me?
Okay. We found this mouse in a bottle of Elsinore beer that we bought at your beer store, eh? And we heard, like, when that happens, that you get your beer free.
It's in the Canadian Criminal Code, eh? Yeah. Like, there's legal precedent setting cases in law.
So, like, give us our free beer.
You want free beer? Go to the brewery. Now get out of here before I put the two of you in a bottle.
You sure you don't want to think this over?
I'm sure.
Okay,
we're going.
Yeah,
see ya.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Dan Green.
And I'm Aaron Clark. We are beginning tonight with what is literally a whale of a story. For the past couple of weeks, we've been following rescue crews tracking a humpback whale, first spotted off the Central Coast, entangled in a crab pot line. Rescuers eventually freed the crab pots. They got the crab pots off the whale, but the line, the rope, remained wrapped around the whale's fluke. That is, until today.
Now look at this amazing video. A rescue team approached the whale off the coast and started unwinding that line that was wrapped around the whale's fluke. The remarkable thing is just how calm this whale was. Joining us now is a member of the team that freed the whale. That's Peggy Westap. And Peggy, we're looking at the video right now, and you were out there. First of all, what's it like to be there, and were you surprised at how that whale remained so calm through this whole thing?
Oh, yeah, it was just amazing. One, because we started this whole effort on the 27th of April, and that was like the 17th day into this. And the whale was just absolutely exhausted. It'd been through so much. It actually traveled since the first time we put that telemetry buoy on, 684 nautical miles. And so...
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. So it had traveled the telemetry path, because we've been tracking that whale since April 27th. It had gone 684 nautical miles, as I said. So that whale was absolutely exhausted. It had been trying to feed, but we think that because of the, even though we cut that crab, the commercial crab pot off on the 28th of April, which weighed over 100 pounds and probably the drag alone was 300 to 400 pounds, that was gone. We had retrieved that and got that and took it back to shore. But just having those floats in that line, it was so in, it was already embedded because of the weight of the crab pot. But then to have that still on it, plus if you got to consider since then, we have tried to go out and, you know, get to that whale at different points, but the weather has just been really bad. So you got to think all the heavy seas that poor guy was in, guy or gal, we don't know if it's female or male, has been in since, you know, we first put that funnel through.
Peggy, explain to what the viewers are looking at this really remarkable video, and there's damage to the whale's fluke where the line had been wrapped around. Now, once you get that off, is that going to heal? Is the whale going to be okay?
Yes, it's remarkable how well an animal in the ocean can see your chicken. Off of that video, you actually could see whales already starting to gravitate to that pool. And that's what happens with civilization. It helps a man, you know, a boat like that.
How much did you work with whales before then?
I swam with them before. I swam with both gray whales and humpbacks briefly, just on weird encounters. But I've never really worked with a whale, especially the way I do now, because I take people on whale watching trips now. So you know, this is what made this encounter just so unique. So the location of the whale was 17 miles off the coast of San Francisco from the Golden Gate.
And how long does that take you to get out there?
We got the message where the whale was located at 8 o'clock. No one had seen it until we got there. It was roughly about noon. It takes 2 hours to get out there. So, and we're kind of doing circles around looking for the whale for a little while. But we found it. When I say find the whale, it's not like there it is. It literally, we had rolling waves, swell.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that you found it.
Yeah, now you're talking, you know, you're 17 miles offshore. It's not like the beach. It's not flat calm. This is Northern California. The water is green. It's dark. It, when you put your face in the water, it's like putting your face inside a cup of coffee. You can't see anything. Water is dark. And so the distance, the whale below, the green out, just a slight little puff, and then we saw the crabs and crab buoys, which are about the size of a large shoe, that are white with some numbers on them, floating around the whale. When we came up, there were like 10 of these crab trap buoys, which marked the crab trap location, attached to the whale. And we're thinking like, okay, well, you know, this is like a 45-foot whale. You have little buoys that are attached to it, but it should be okay. Upon further inspection, me and diver Tim, we got into a smaller little Zodiac and went next closest to the whale, and we couldn't see. The Marine Mammal Center, their rescue team brought these long canter poles with hooks and knives on them to try to grab the rope. Surface, you couldn't see any rope. And you look down to the water, you couldn't see more than a few inches of the water. Just, like I said, green, dark water. Coffee. So they came back, well, we can't do anything. So me and Tim looked at each other and go, well, we're divers. We want the water. And at that time, and still is, there's a little NOAA rule. Marine Mammal Protection Act says, thou shall not go in the water with whales. In the United States. So we're all like, well...
Watch me.
Well, why is that? Is that for the safety of the whales? Or
it's for the safety of the whales. It's for... So they're not harassed by people. It's also for the safety of people. Because as I'll tell you, as I got into the water, you know, okay, I got dropped off the boat 100 feet away from the whale. I'm looking above the waves. And I see the whale in the distance. I start swimming, going like I can't even see my hand when I put it in my hand, or I can't even see my feet into the water. Just, the visibility is that bad. And I'm swimming towards the whale, and I'm going, I'm getting a little closer. Okay, 40 feet. All right, so let's swim a little closer. Okay, 30 feet. Okay, the whale's 30 feet away from me. Put my head down in the water, and I can't see nothing. Swim a little closer. Okay, 25 feet. I'm getting a little closer. swim a little closer. Okay, put my head above the water. I get 20 feet. I put my head down the water. Next thing I know, I see this pectoral fin. Mm-hmm. The pectoral fin of a humpback whale is like an airplane.
Wow.
It's like 15 feet long, 4 feet wide, and about 4 tons. So it comes above the water about 8 feet above my head, and then it starts crashing down. And I'm going, no, this is going to hurt. And the whale just put out his pectoral fin and slammed it into the water next to my head, literally inches away. And I was going, okay, well, all right, I'm going to hang out here. And they're like, well, what do you want to do? I'm like, well, I said, let's just wait and see what happens. So I waited. 5 minutes went by, 10 minutes went by, and I'm looking at the whale, and it's not, and I can see its pectoral fin moving back and forth still. And then finally, about 15 minutes later, I told Tim, who was behind me by about 15 feet, and then behind him was the Zodiac, and behind him was our 56-foot boat that brought us out there. I said, okay, I'm going for it. And when I told him that, the whale came up, put its eye above the surface, and looked at me. And it was held itself there. And I was like, okay, here we go. So I swam up to the whale, you know, 45, it's like swimming up to a bus. And I put my hand, I swim up to its eye, and I put my hand right next to its eye, and I start petting her. And I'm talking to the whale. It's not talking to him. I'm going, it's okay. I'm not going to hurt you. Don't kill me. And, you know, the whole time there, at that point, I realized just how entangled this whale was.
Yeah, where was all the netting? Was it just, I mean, everywhere? Or?
Yeah, so it's not netting. So the crab traps.
Or the traps, I mean.
Yeah, so crab traps, they're about 100 pounds. They're about, commercial crab traps, about 4 feet in diameter, and about 18 inches high. They weigh about 100 pounds. And they're attached with, where we fish out here by San Francisco, they're attached with 240 feet of line, because we're in 180 feet of water, attached with 240 feet of line that goes to the surface, and that is suspended by the crab buoy. So that's what we saw. We saw the crab buoys.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lines, as I got close, were, you know, it's like swimming in spaghetti. There's just so much line slack there.
Really?
But the lines were actually cut into the whale.
So it had been entangled for a while.
Yeah. The guys thought the crab traps were clean the day before, but because they pulled all the crab from them. But for the last 24 hours, that whale could have been entangled. So the ropes were 2-3 inches into the blubber. It went around its head, through its figurates, through its mouth, around its pectoral fins, and down. And then later on, we realized it was all the way down to the tail. So it was literally a 45-foot humpback whale, hog-tied in the ocean, drowning by 2,000 pounds of crab traps. So the whale didn't move at that point, but I told him, come on over. We're both going at this animal, and it's looking at us, and the eyes the size of a grapefruit, looking back and forth, just going, very humbling experience, seeing an animal recognize you that's that big. It's just a very humbling, special moment. And then the whale just settled down, and she didn't move from there. So we went back and back to the boat. We had two other divers there, and they're like, well, what do you think? I'm like, well, man, it's like swimming in spaghetti. There's so many ropes there. They're going around my neck. They're going around my fins. They're dragging me down, constantly keep aware of taking these ropes off me. They're like, what do you think? I said, well, truthfully, I think we're looking at a dead whale. The whale just doesn't know it yet. I mean, it's so entangled. There's no way we're going to be able to get all these ropes off. And then one of the lead person from the Marine Mammal Center says, okay, let's go. I'm like, oh, no. I said, we probably won't, but we're going to try. And everybody's like, okay, let's do this. So me and Tim were on scuba, on dive gear with tanks, and then the two other guys were just snorkeling. And the four of us went out there. And I swam up to the whale first again, and I brought that one along and introduced the whale. Whale, this is Jake. Whale, this is Tim. You guys come on over, okay? And the whale just settled down, and we all just started cutting. Just grabbing ropes, cutting them, sinking them, cutting, grabbing more ropes. It took four of us in the water 2.5 hours to clear, we estimated, over a mile and a half of line of rope.
The rope is known as blue steel because it's Kevlar-based rope. So it took us 2.5 hours. Yeah,
not easy to cut through.
Not easy. And at some point, like I said, the rope was inside the blubber. A few times I was actually having to stab the whale and hit the back of my knife into the blubber and then pull back sawing to get the rope cut away from the whale.
Was there any point during particularly things like that where you felt her resisting or pushing back on you? Or
no, she would come up and breathe every minute, and even the breathe was very late. You could tell it was very labored. It was so it was a very labored breath because she's being pulled down by these traps, but she didn't move. She would flinch a few times when I had to put my knife into her. But one of the moments I'll never forget, so I'm down 20 feet under the whale next to the tail, and the ropes there are literally 10 inches thick because they've just all gathered there. And I look down below that, 20 feet below that, I can now finally see, like, okay, there's the 2,000 pounds of crab traps that are all tied up right there. And, you know, I'm like, okay, well, I need to cut this loose. I'm cutting, and you cut one line, and then things will go, and the ropes would get tight. And it was a really scary moment because I'm just thinking, like, man, if I get one of these ropes gets tight and I get pinned against this whale.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's scary.
For 2.5 hours, my mind, everybody's mind was going through, okay, the whale starts to move, I need to be clear of these lines. Otherwise, I'm never going to get loose. You know, I went like a Mexican to a knife fight. I had like 5 knives on, so I could cut loose and scissors and everything else in T-shirts. But I finally cut that last line loose at the tail, and you can see her just fully extend her tail and come up, and you can hear her take a deep breath, and I come up. Yeah, we got it. You know, I got all the lines off. The guys are like, oh, yeah, we got all the mouth. And I remember Jason, there's a rope sticking out of the mouth, and we're pulling them all. And he has his knee against the whale's mouth, and he's trying to pull on this rope, and he can't get it. Pushing up on the whale's lip, and he can't get it. And then finally, the whale all four of us are there. Finally, the whale's mouth opens up, all four of us are there. And he just pulls the rope out of the mouth. The whale keeps his mouth open. He's like, oh, there's another one in there. So he puts his hand inside the whale's mouth and pulls that one out. Oh, look, there's another one in there. Next thing I know, Jason's leaning in. His shoulder is all the way inside the whale's mouth, pulling the last piece of rope out.
Man.
Oh, and it was just an amazing time. And at that point, the whale realized, like, okay, hey. You know, you can see her start moving around, like, okay, hey, you know, there's nothing on me. And she starts moving really slowly, and she's like stretching, and then slowly, very gently, she starts swimming away, and then she starts circling us, and we're all spread out, giving her some room, and she starts doing figure eights around us and around the boat.
What did you think at that point that circling you? Was that a little intimidating or?
No, I mean, it was just great because I was watching her being free and swim around. It's like, okay, yeah, you know, her tail is still okay. She's using her tail. So, you know, she's great. She's going. And then she dove down, and I'm looking around like, okay, you know, she was swimming by at 3-4 miles per hour, you know, swimming by us very close. And as well as she swim by, she would just glide by us and then kick when we're not around. And just seeing that, we're just like, you know, high-fiving each other, going, oh, my God, this is great. And they're like, oh, and the whale dropped down. I'm like, okay, where'd she go? And, you know, I'm just thinking, like, I'm putting my face in the water going, I don't see nothing. I don't see anything. Yeah. And, you know, I'm looking around. And I look down again under the water, and by my feet, I see this whale. It's a tenth of a second type of stuff. I see this whale coming up out of the deep under my fins, and I'm just going, oh, my God, it's coming straight up.
Yeah.
And I'm just going, oh, and I'm like, I'm backing up, swimming as fast as I can backwards. And next thing I know, the whale's up at my chest. And she stops 6 inches away from my chest, and then she nudges me forward using her nose. And wow. She backs up, nudges me again, so ever gently. And again. And then she backs up and she swims and she puts her eye right towards me. She looks at me. She rolled on her side, so her eye's out of the water, and she's there inches away, and she's looking into me, right? You know, eye to eye. And then she goes to Tim and Jason and the other guys, and she does that. She nudges all of us. It got to the point where we're like, come over here, come over here. You know, I'm slapping the whale. Like,
she went to each of you individually?
Each of us individually nudged us around. And we were like, you know, 50, 70 feet apart from each other. And she came back and nudged me again, and was like, you know, ever so gently. I mean, it's like if you're a dog owner, and or you've gone to someone who has a dog, and the dog puts their nose underneath your hand, like, hey, I want to be petted. That's what it felt like. It's like, hey, I'm around here. I want some more loving. Or, you know, I'm here I am. And she would push us around. I got pushed around 3 times, nudgingly pushed.
So how long did she stay with you doing that after you had gotten
at that point, my boat captain got pissed off. He's like, okay, you guys in Kumbaya, you need to get on the boat because I'm getting jealous, or otherwise you're going to swim back home. Morning sun is rising, casting rays across the land. Already nature's calling, take heed of the warning.
Should have done before. The way that things are going, the end is about to fall.
Welcome back, dear listener. You're listening to Easy Sonic Living on CKUT 90.3. This is the Animal-Human Encounter episode of Easy Sonic Living. And we've also been listening to a 1971 album by Hawkwind called In Search of Space. which I'm just putting on because it's really trippy and I like it. And I also want to tell you a story, dear intrepid listener, about some of the research I did for this show and my never-ending sadness that I could not find audio of this event that happened that I think is very easy sonic living in London at the Hayward Gallery in 2018. So what happened is there's an amazing South Korean artist called Lee Bull, and she had a piece called Majestic Splendor, which had actually already been shown in New York, but had to be it caused too much nasty smell, so it had to be taken down in New York City, actually, in the 90s. So this time when she re-put on the same exhibit, which is basically a rotting fish covered in sequins, they decided that they should, to minimize the smell, they would put the fish as they're decomposing into bags full of a chemical to make the smell not so bad. But unfortunately, they only later realized that that chemical actually can become highly explosive when it's mixed with the chemicals off-gassing from the decomposing fish. So when they realized this, of course, right before the opening, they immediately tried to take the exhibit down from the Hayward Gallery in London, England. Unfortunately, they were too late because the fish spontaneously combusted right in the art gallery, damaging the art gallery, but not too seriously. And they had to call the fire department to put out the exploded fish fire that they had caused. So there you go. I mean, I think it was worth it because even though none of us ever got to see that particular incarnation of Majestic Splendor, I think, you know, that was great art. That was amazing art that happened. So thank you so much, Lee Bull. Thank you so much, Hayward Gallery, for taking a risk. And thank you so much, London Fire Services, for putting out the fire. That's it. Easy Sonic Living, CKUT 90.3.
Once more. Hold in. Okay, let's go. Paint. Come on. Paint. Good boy. Good boy.
Many zoos use painting artwork as a kind of enrichment activity, as a leisure activity to keep the animals happy and occupied. Obviously, we've come a long way in zoos where there just used to be concrete and metal cages to having very many toys and things to hang off and swing around. And the kind of painting activities is one way that animals have been kept more active mentally. The different species are kind of taught to paint in different ways or encouraged to paint in different ways. With the elephants, it's really quite different to how you might imagine it. Their handler is holding them by the ear and just kind of using the ear like a joystick, if you like, to steer the trunk. But it displays an incredible level of dexterity.
In the 1950s, a popular television program called Zoo Time emerged, made by Granada Television and presented by Desmond Morris, and this was a runaway success in terms of popular television. One of the most well-received moments of the show was when Congo would do some drawings on camera, and this gave a body of work which was then shown in 1958 at the Institute for Contemporary Art. You could see the evolution of a particular sort of drawing style, if you like, that there was a change in the way in which Congo was approaching drawing. What we tried to do here is, I don't know if it's exactly the first show, but one of the first shows to look at bringing various different species together and to try and take a broader view over what's happening amongst a variety of species and whether we can call it art or not.
Because certainly I think this painting by Samantha is a lot more coherent than the painting by the orangutan.
As an artist myself, I do instinctively want them, you know, these animals to be sort of engaging in the process that I engage in.
I think we are asking the question, is it art or is it just creative activity? But it certainly makes me think more about looking at human art, thinking, you know, is that art? What is the intention? can animals be creative? It's you know, the artwork is obviously only one version of that. There's many other ways that animals can express themselves through bird song and other vocalizations, that they're clearly just doing things for fun. But it's certainly true that animals do express themselves. So that does raise the question of if there's expression, there's creativity, where does art begin and creativity end?
Aww. I think he's good.
11th of August 1961. Thousand thanks for your Paris letter and apologies for the delay. I've committed myself and yesterday too to devoting myself to my mama in the country this weekend, and I'm such a neglectful and interminate son that I can't put it off now. I am longing to see you and hate the thought of your vanishing out of reach for what seems like such an age all unembraced. I say, what gloomy tidings about the crabs? Could it be me? I'll tell you why this odd doubt exists. Just after arriving back to London from Athens, I was suddenly alerted by what felt like the beginnings of troop movements in the Fork. But on scrutiny, expecting an aerial view of general mobilization, there was nothing to be seen. Not even a scout, a spy, or a dispatch rider. Puzzled, I watched and waited, and soon even the preliminary trampings died away. So I assumed, as the happy summer days of peace followed one another, that the incident or the delusive shudder through the chancelleries was over. While this faint scare was on, knowing that, thanks to lunar tyranny, it couldn't have been from you, I assumed, and please spare my blushes here, that the handover bid must have occurred by dint of a meeting with an old pal in Paris, which I'm sorry to announce ended in brief carnal knowledge. More for old lang syne than any other reason. On getting your letter, I made a dash for privacy and thrashed through the undergrowth, but found everything almost eerily calm. Fragrant and silent glades that might never have known the invader's tread. The whole thing made me scratch my head, if I may so put it. But I bet your trouble does come from me, because the crabs of the world seem to fly like me, like the children of Israel to Abram's bosom, a sort of ambulant Canaan. I've been a real martyr to them. What must have happened is this. A tiny, picked, cunning, and well-camouflaged commando must have landed while I was in Paris and then lain up, seeing me merely as a stepping stone or a springboard to better things. And when they came within striking distance, knowing the highest, when they saw it, they struck. And who wouldn't? And then deployed in force, leaving their first beachhead empty. Or so I think. Security will be tightened up. They may have left an agent with a radio who was playing a waiting game. I wonder whether I've reconstructed the events all right. I do hope so. I couldn't bear it to be anybody but me. But at the same time, it is me. VV many apologies. There is some wonderful Italian powder you can get in France called Mum. Another indication of a matriarchal society, which is worth its weight in gold. And it is rather sad to think that their revels now are ended, that the happy woods where I would fain be, wandering in pensive mood, where they held high holiday, will soon be silent. Where are all their quips and quiddities? The pattering of tiny feet will be still. Bare ruined choirs. Don't tell anyone about this private fauna. Mum's the word. Gentle reader. No more now, my darling. I must leap into my faithful standard companion, dash to the post with this, and hoping and praying it gets to you in time. No need to say how much I'm going to miss you. You know I will. Not only the moon's arrival now, but the sun and Greece as well. And I know what potent allies they are. But no moping. We'll make some glowing plans when you get back and see what magic the mysterious North can offer. Anyway, bless you a billion times. Lots of love, hugs and kisses from Paddy.
Well, that was the show. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm going to actually end the show with some music that has nothing to do with what we've just heard. It's actually just an homage to the Montreal nightlife. I recently went back to Balatou for the first time in a long time, and I heard Chanda and the Passengers, and they're just a great local band, and it made me think, wow, it's amazing. This is an amazing city in an amazing place with amazing music that sometimes we don't take advantage of. So thank you, Chanda. Thank you, Passengers. Thank you, Balatou, for reminding how much excitement is out there. So take care. Have a good week. And don't make any art with decomposing fish unless you have a fire extinguisher nearby. Take care. Easy Sonic Living, CKUT 90.5. I can see, I can feel.
No arch criminal line at all.
Somebody with power.
There was
somebody who was capable of tracking us in New York.
Not from a Kaiser
Soze. You think
Kaiser
Soze this close to getting caught and sticks his head out?
You get no Kaiser from me.
Because you're stupid, Verbal. Because you're
Kaiser
a cripple.
Soze. What I want to know is who's the gimp.
You know the whole fucking time.
Kaiser Soze. If he comes up for anything,
Kaiser Soze,
get rid of me. But I'm sure Keaton is dead.
I can't feel my legs. Kaiser.
First thing I learned on the job, you know what it was? How to spot a murderer.
You tell me you got the cripple in there from New York.
Yeah.
He mentioned Kaiser Soze.
Who?
After that, my guess is you'll never hear from him again.
City thought that he knew how to drink. It happens that sometimes a guy ain't tough as he might think. He ordered a shot of red eye, had a couple straights. He had a date that evening, but he got there 5 days late.
He come to town.